what's making me really frustrated right now is when I hear people talk about this as stimulus. Let's be clear, it is not stimulus money to give people money so they can feed themselves, so that they can keep heat on in the winter, so that they can avoid eviction. That's not stimulus. That is basic needs that we're talking about meeting. And you're absolutely right that it's not enough to just do some unemployment. It's not enough to do more with food assistance. People need that direct assistance. And all of the research on this, interestingly, shows that direct cash money to families, allowing them to decide how to spend it, actually is the most efficient use of our tax dollars, partly because that money can't be distorted by special interests like Wall Street banks along the way.
It is Friday, December 4th, 2020. Welcome to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. Yes, Katie Porter, everybody. Katie Porter, telling the truth as she always does. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to asymptomatic coup survivor Sean Kitchen about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On today's show, well, first of all, we're back from Thanksgiving after a little break. We're into December, right? The final stretch of 2020, this freaking year, 2020, and starting to look forward in terms of strategy for the head. This is freaking amazing. But before we get to good news, gotta go through the bad news. Today's show, the U.S. is breaking COVID-19 records once again, as Sean coughs in the background. According to the COVID Tracking Project, for the first time, over 100,000 people are currently hospitalized. That's 65% higher than any time since the beginning of the pandemic. Yesterday, 2,706 Americans died as a result of COVID. And for the first time, more than 210,000 new cases were reported in a single day. Not good. Very bad, very bad, terrible. On Wednesday, the UN State of the Climate Report was released, and it was not encouraging. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres put it bluntly, quote, "To put it simply, the state of the planet is broken," unquote. 2020 will be one of the three hottest years on record. Marine heat waves warmed 80% of the world's oceans, and triple-digit heat waves hit... Are you ready for this? Triple-digit heat waves hit Siberia. Siberia. In a speech at Columbia University summarizing the report's finding, Guterres said, quote, "Dear friends, humanity is waging war on nature. This is suicidal. Nature always strikes back, and it is already doing so with growing force and fury." Maybe we should get right on that? Front and center of the Biden administration? Yeah, I think so. Former Presidents Obama, Bush, and Clinton are all planning on getting the COVID-19 vaccine publicly as part of a campaign to build confidence after the freaking Trumpistas are trying to undercut their own whatever. I mean, whatever now. President-elect Joe Biden said, yep, I'll join. I'll get that too. Incidentally, he also hurt his foot playing with his dog this week. So, just saying. Pfizer announced yesterday that they'll have to cut in half the number of vaccines available in the first batch. Now, this has really kind of been a letdown to a lot of folks. But what they identified was a problem in the supply lines. You remember, the Pfizer vaccine has to be kept at ultra-low temperatures. Apparently, it's something to do with that. We'll talk a little bit about that. And Republicans are finally having to deal with their Frankenstein monsters. Have you been following what's going on in Georgia? It's like, what? Rabid Trumpers are calling for supporters not to vote for the Republican candidates in January because, you know, Hugo Chavez and his, like, ghost voting machine plan thing, right? And because the governor and the Secretary of State refused to exercise all voting machines of the ghost of Chavez, they're saying, nope, lock him up instead. Lock up the governor. Lock up the Secretary of State. Don't vote for the senators. Don't vote for Republican candidate. Why would we be such fools? And Republicans are down there going like this. Habana. You know what? Piece of advice to Democrats? Let them fail. Jesus. Yeah, that's Sidney Powell and L.N. Lynn Wood put on quite a show. And they basically came out and led chants, literally, in lock him up, referring to the Secretary of State and the governor, who are Republicans, conservative Republicans, right? And remember, I'll get into this in the show, because this is just absolutely insane. Anyways, but now Republicans are really wondering, holy crap, this could sink their chances in the senatorial runoff elections coming up in January. So whatever, you know, again, let them fail. And so what do you think you folks think about Joe Biden's cabinet nominees and people in his administration? Just curious what you think. Hop on over to our YouTube channel if you're not there already. Get in our comments. Let us know what you think. We'll give you some of our thoughts. A little closer to home, Rudy Giuliani's traveling circus came to the Wyndham in Gettysburg off Route 15 last week. Yep. And it was just as big of a shit show as you'd expect it to be. Senator Mastriano, you know, hosted that super spreader PA Senate GOP policy committee. Right? That was what was at Gettysburg, right? And basically they wanted to spread conspiracies and COVID, right? Equal opportunity spreaders. Fantastic. After the show hearing, Mastriano and his two sons were pulled from a coup-plotting meeting at the White House after they tested positive for COVID. Sir, please, you have to come with us. Jeez. I swear, I'm trying to keep my, not go into, like, extensive commentary right now because it's just, like, it's crazy. Response from the Senate GOP was, well, let me see if I have it here. I believe the response sounded a little bit something like this. Yep, that was it. Yeah, actual crickets. Senator Judy Ward came down with COVID after the meeting. Sorry, it's not funny. And it took Senator Jake Corman a week to respond to the press by saying, mistakes were made. Mistakes were made. Yeah, mistakes were made, by the way, is the new sorry, not sorry, just so you know. And Senators Aubin and Martin, who did not attend the hearing, published an op-ed blasting disinformation coming from their own party. That response would have helped 3 weeks ago, but welcome to the party. Let them fail. Let them fail. Yes. In response to the election, Harrisburg Republicans are getting ready to disenfranchise voters, attacking vote-by-mail, signature tests, limiting how counties can cure ballots, and much, much more. Yes, the gift that keeps on giving, everybody. Well, the New York Dispatch editorial board came out with a scathing editorial about PA state senator and governor gubernatorial wannabe Doug Mastriano. Yes, the same for the super spreader event. Same guy. Yep, that's Mastriano's COVID positive Trump event and his appearance on Steve Bannon's podcast calling for a resolution to overturn PA election results and hand the state electors to Trump. Well, it turns out just a bridge too far. The editorial made it plain, quote, Mastriano's shocking call for tyranny, rooted solely on the fact that his side lost, was merely the conclusion of a week where, through his own actions, the senator was exposed for his craven oligarch. Was exposed for the craven oligarch he really is. Hear, hear. And in today's last call, yeah, I've been watching a little bit of His Dark Materials. Yep, getting a little bit into that Blasphemy trilogy, you know. That's pretty good. Elon Musk, yep, he's still going to the moon by 2024, regardless of what NASA does. That's going to be interesting. Scientists are saying that the underground brine on Mars could be a good source of oxygen for the red planet. We're going to talk a little about some of Free Will's releases as we head into the winter months. They still got some Ralphius available. And Sean is going to share with us his deck plans. All in today's last call. Want to remind everybody to tune to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org and tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure to subscribe to Rick's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbeans, wherever you get your podcasts. Want to welcome a new member. Bing, 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 bing. New member to the folds. Want to thank you to Nicholas. Nicholas just became a member over the holiday. Thank you, Nicholas, so much for becoming a patron over at patreon.com. I can't tell you how much your support means to me, means to the show, and means to the future of progressive politics in this state. Because look, if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We're expanding our network as we prepare for the fight for our lives, the fight for the future in 2020. We're all in for that fight, and now we need you. We're not asking you to break the bank. We're asking you to become a member for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media in the movement, the movement in the media. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. And one of those little features that has been enabled by our increasing numbers of members in this show has been our Out the Coop Live feature. Out the Coop Live is going to be returning this coming Monday, November 7th. At this point, it may be just kind of like a welcome back and situation show, talking through some of the events for a live call-in show, because I'm really curious of how people are coping with what's going on with the COVID-19. However, we might have a guest, so basically, please stay tuned to our social media. Check us out on Twitter. Make sure you're subscribing to our YouTube channel, right? That's YouTube. You just go to YouTube, then / Raging Chicken Press, or just search Raging Chicken Press on YouTube. Make sure you're subscribing, making sure you're getting all the updates about when we go live. Make sure that you're kind of subscribing to our podcast. It's the best thing that you can do. If you subscribe on iTunes, hit that 5-star rating and make sure that you're getting us up there in the rankings so more people can find our show. But wherever you subscribe to your podcast, if you listen to our regular podcast, make sure that you're liking us, that you're leaving us comments, that you're giving us good ratings, and that helps kind of push it out to more people. So thank you for that. We've got some really cool stuff planned for the next few weeks leading up to the Christmas holiday. So I don't want to kind of like tip my hand too quickly until we've got everything locked down into our upcoming guests, but I'm pretty psyched. I'll give you one little tidbit. It looks like we're gonna have our first international guest on the show, which would be pretty freaking cool. Right, just gotta say. And I will say this: if we can nail down that interview, we're just kind of scheduling times right now. One of the reasons of having this is because I want Sean Kitchen to understand that I'm not crazy. I'm gonna leave it at that. All right, so Sean, man, welcome back from Thanksgiving. I hope that you and your family and everything like this has been well. I know that you stayed in Harrisburg, but I hope everybody's doing good. I mean, how was your Thanksgiving break?
Pretty good. I am now getting off of Thanksgiving break, or break of the past month, with this election being over. I had a nice like time partying it up a bit, but I'm getting back onto my diet and, cutting back the drinking and all that.
Yeah, well,
the post-election release of energy.
Well, you got to, that was intense.
It's a trap. It's an actual trap. It is a, like, the time after the elections, it's the second term, it's a trap. It's just an emotional release of stuff. You don't care. You're drinking more. You're having more to eat. Stuff like that. Yep. Like, it's just like, so I'm getting out of that. But no, it's been a wild fun ride, I'll tell you that.
It's been something. I mean, I don't know if you feel this way too as well, but for me, I think I finally kind of settled in a space where I'm not feeling like every neuron in my body is firing all the time. Right?
Yeah.
It just feels like
I haven't been posting it on Facebook at all. Yeah. That much. Like, I just haven't been, giving a shit what the Republicans have been doing with their fucking hearings the past couple of days and like different states with Giuliani and all that. Like, the election's over, states are certifying, and like we're gonna have to deal with these people as a political reality over the next 4 years.
Well, exactly. And you know what? I've been doing a lot of the reading that I've been doing.
Or for like the rest of our lifetime. Pretty much.
No, exactly. I mean, a lot of the reading that I've been doing of late too has been really much more focused on thinking down the road as opposed to like what the hell just happened this afternoon, and how might that impact like the election or this next thing is going to go on. I mean, it does feel, at least in my own kind of my, I don't know what you call it, like viewfinder of the world right now, Trump really feels like it's kind of fading away into the background. And I know I'm not being naive about the kind of wreckage that is actually happening right now. Like, what I didn't put a whole bunch of stuff in the intro today about, you know, what's actually happening with some of the firings that are going on in the Pentagon, the way that he's kind of, you know, looking to mess up things for the Biden administration. Like, I think that's going to happen. But I've been really encouraged just to kind of hear how movements have been really thinking about planning for 2021 and not, you know, and basically saying, okay, we did the election stuff now. Now we're gonna get out of this kind of like meat grinder of news about every little move that the Trump lawyers are making, because you recognize it's a bunch of farce. And you know, the Trump, you know, they've already raised like between Trump campaign, the new Trump PAC, and the Republican Party over $200 million, right?
It's amazing. It is fucking phenomenal how big of a fucking scam this is.
Oh my god, it's just like it's crazy.
It is like, yeah. Like, it is just like he is just abusing the fuck out of his supporters. Like, I've been watching a lot of like Twitch streaming lately. Like, I got into like after the election, or like right around the election, watching Hassan Piker. Now I'm watching some Vosh of his stuff, and Vosh is just like that had a thing where like their Trump campaign's blasting like 8 to 12 like emails out a fucking day.
Yeah,
like hitting these people up for cash, like, and just abusing the fuck. It is like a scam. It is like just like a, like it's not like basic campaign emails, but it's just like it is just like scamming these people for their money.
No, it's like I got, you know, if you want a textbook grift, there you go. I mean, basically what they're doing right now is they're doing what Newt Gingrich, like how Newt Gingrich makes his money. Right. I mean, they basically took, I mean, this is how far back it goes, like the 1994 when Newt Gingrich started doing exactly this play, right? Raising money and using kind of crisis, or using like, you know, electoral stuff, or using aggrievement, really, as a way to kind of raise tons of cash to stick in your own pockets. I mean, it's like, you know,
yeah, white identity aggrievement politics.
That's what it is. And that, you know, and, you know, the horrible thing about it, right, is that, I mean, just like you said, I mean, this is an abusive dynamic, right? All these people who are like the cult followers of Trump now are in a situation where, you know, they're just being bled dry. I mean, it really is. You know, like, we talked about this a few weeks back about, you know, like these, why is it that Trump gets along so well with these kind of like televangelists and stuff? It's because of this, right? It's like this is, they do the same thing. They get people in, they get people to believe, they believe beyond reason. Right. And then they're going to willing to hand over whatever cash that they have, their time, whatever they have.
And speaking about cults,
yeah,
like actual fucking cults have been showing up to the Capitol.
Oh, yeah.
The
past, I've seen your pictures on this. It's been great. Like, I love like well, Stephen Caruso was kind of like, why is there like, you know, like flags of like, you know, Korean and flags. Japan. And he's like, you know, completely like dumbfounded by what the hell is going on. And you're like, oh, yeah, it's the cult show.
Oh, yeah. No, like, so like literally like two different cults have been showing up. A bunch of people from Falun Gong have been showing up.
Falun Gong, yeah.
It, with their anti-communist, anti-CCP rhetoric, like 300 fucking cars showed up to a Trump rally, all with like anti-CCP billboards plastered to their fucking cars, which is just amazing. Roxbury called me. He's like, hey, you have to get to the Capitol and see this. Like, all the white Trump supporters don't know what the fuck is going on. And then like the Epoch Times is following these people. So like,
well,
New Tang Dynasty.
They're connected. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so like New Tang Dynasty, Falun Gong, and Epoch Times are all there. And then also the fucking Moon family showed up.
I love it.
And the Moon cult. called the Iron Death Rod. Iron Rod. And they had they had Japanese for Trump signs, right? And on the back of the sign, you could clearly see like it was an iron rod, like one of their fucking cult following, like their logo on the sign. And like what happened is like the Moon family, I guess they had a big international gathering, like back in their cult had a big international gathering in northeastern PA back in like the end of October. And now like they're just paying these people to stick around to go to these fucking Trump rallies, like all throughout northeastern PA and here in Harrisburg. They showed up to the Super Spreader event in Gettysburg last week. They were outside, like the moon, the actual car, the actual owner of the car gun family, the gun group, the gun manufacturer, the actual moon cult leader, had his picture taken outside of the Wyndham Hotel in Gettysburg.
Nice.
Like reading the Bible. Nice. And the photographer didn't know who it was, but like, it's the actual like cult leader from, yeah, it's like they've been fucking just, yeah, using this to like co-opt their own shit. Like, it's just, it's amazing watching this stuff like happen. Like, there's,
well, and like, and here's the thing,
cults.
Right? I mean,
and then the Jericho people have been constantly walking around the Capitol every day.
Awesome.
Seven times. What's that?
I said awesome. This is great, man. Like, what a show.
So, like, the Jericho people, like, their shtick is these are ultra conservative Catholics. Who've been coming in? What, like, a woman?
Did they have their big banners and their dress?
Oh, they got their fucking banners. Nice. They have Trump flags. Like, they're shouting the Hail Mary and the Our Father. And what
this is like so freaking crazy.
Like, they're going around praying the rosary. Like, they're walking around the skirt of the Capitol, the top skirt of the Capitol, around the base of the building, and they're praying the rosary, and they are walking around the Capitol seven times.
The Spanish Inquisition.
As if they are walking around the walls of Jericho. Like, and they're going to bring the Capitol down.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
And this stuff is still going on daily in the Capitol, like in Harrisburg. Like, it's just been a fucking, like, just lost tribe of, like, cult members. Like, they're like orcs.
Like,
just orcs in the wild. These people are like orcs in the wild at this point. Just fucking attacking each other, eating each other, just wandering around aimlessly now that Trump's gone, Sauron's defeated.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
it's been phenomenal. It's stunning.
it's like, you know, I'm sitting here laughing at it, and like I just don't know what else to do. I mean, if you like,
oh, they're coming out tomorrow because Mastriano's having a fucking Christmas party, and like these people are not fucking just, yeah. So I may or may not go take pictures, but like, I can't because these people aren't fucking wearing masks. So yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, you know, I don't think I've ever appreciated the importance of comedy and laughter more than I have, like, of late, right? In part of just like a way of like dealing in a semi-productive way with the feelings of this kind of space. Because, I mean, if you just think about it like this, think about what, like, people writing about this period in time, even like 5-10 years down the road, right? It's going to be like
a fucking shit show.
They're not going to be able to believe that this actually went on. You know, I mean, well, I mean, I shouldn't say that. Who the hell knows where we're going to be in 5-10 years? I mean, like, you know, who knows? Maybe that will be the norm at that point. Like, they'll be like, yes, back then, you know, in the 20th year of 2020, when everything was born. Who knows? I mean, it could go really, really south, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, it's certainly like, and still COVID, you know, like Trump, you know, not doing anything about COVID.
No. Well, yeah. So you look at, I mean, you look, I look, I don't know, Sean. I mean, we're like they're projected now. I saw some of the projections now. They're saying that, you know, we could be hitting about 450 kind of, Jesus Christ, 450,000 deaths by February at this point, at this rate. And that's assuming it doesn't get even worse than it is right now. I've
had friends who've had it already.
Yeah.
A couple of them have got it like pretty moderately or bad, right? Like, you know, I'm not going to name them, but, you know, they've been posting about on social media for the past couple of weeks. You know, this is nothing like the flu. Like, in their words, I have never gotten the flu symptomatically.
Yeah.
You know, like, knock on wood, but like, so I wouldn't be able to
have a point of comparison.
Make those comparisons, but like, this is definitely not like the flu. You know, like, especially from a breathing, it's just a constant chest and ache, chest and heart pain, like, just from, like, the attacking your system and stuff like that. And people are still, like, having trouble walking and breathing a few weeks afterwards, like, after, like, they've, their symptoms have subsided.
It's bad. Look, I remember...
I mean, like, we're... Yeah.
No, I mean, I remember early on, I mean, one of my parents' good friends.
I mean, we're going to deal with fucking legislation to make sure COVID patients are covered properly in this country.
100%. I mean, that should be an, like, that should be an absolute baseline, right? I mean, come on. I mean, this is... I look at what's going on. Okay, if you want to get real on it, right? I mean, this is going to have such long-term impacts, right? Over, like, on, well, just on people,
on society, like, well, on, yeah, exactly, on budgets,
right across the board. I mean, it's gonna, you know, both in terms of, like, our economy, there's already, you know, we could spend a whole show just on that, but what the impact of what it's going to look like. I mean, right now,
generational long, like, medical costs.
Right. You know, and one thing that I didn't put in the opener today, because in part because, like, I just it's really frustrating. That's why I kind of use, you know, have Katie Porter sound right at the top of it, is because you have this, you know, package, this quote unquote relief package, whatever the hell it's, you know, being shopped around right now. And you can see this kind of, like, attempts to consolidate this, you know, centrist caucus, right, with people like Joe Manchin and Susan Collins, right? They gave this little press conference saying, yeah, we're working on this kind of deal. And that's the play going forward. And frankly, for every single thing that is facing this country right now, whether it's some climate change, whether it's the pandemic, whether it's, you know, the racial violence and systemic racism, you go right down the list of the challenges that we're facing and the crises that we're facing right now, that approach is inadequate. Right, it's going to get us nowhere near where we need to be. And if you look at what's just happened, I mean, people, unemployment benefits have run out, right? People are being evicted from their homes now because the moratorium has been allowed to lapse and not renewed. I mean, these are real tangible things that are going on right before the freaking holidays. And then we're going to get hit, you know, you look at what's going to happen from Thanksgiving, right? I mean, all indicators point to the fact that people just did not pay attention, right? The vast majority, well, I don't know for the vast majority, but a significant number of people just ignored the dire warnings about, you know, around Thanksgiving gatherings. And so we're going to see the results of that, right? We're going to see right now, we hit, like I said, at the top of the show, we hit 100,000 people in the hospital, right? That's like I said, 65% higher than any other time during the pandemic, 100,000 yeah. people. And that is going to only increase, right? So, you know, if you actually look at the numbers and the charts, right, there was this...
And this is just destroying, like, rural areas right now, too.
That's exactly it.
Like, this is just ravaging, like, rural Pennsylvania. This is ravaging, like, rural America, the fucking... All the red count... Like, you know, I hate to say red state, blue states, but, like, a lot of your red states now are on fire with COVID. And it's like... You know, your leadership is Republican leadership has failed these people.
Yeah.
Like, only now you're starting to see Fox News come around telling people to wear masks. Like, did you see what Brian Williams said? History will remember you for being the main drivers of this disease.
Yeah.
Like, and denialism. Like,
well, you even saw, what's his face? What's the guy? Ducey? Ducey's that dude, dude on Fox and Friends, right? The guy who's basically, he came out and said on, like, Fox and Friends the other day, he's like, well, look, it turns out they show that they looked at counties where there was a mask mandate and people abided by it, and where there wasn't, and then where there was a mask mandate, there were fewer cases, right? So it turns out that, you know, that's right. And then the co-host of the show, whoever's the woman who sits in the center, I mean, I don't watch that show normally, but Ainsley Earhart, is that her name? Right?
I don't know.
But whatever. But she's like, so she's like, well, it shows you, you know, that you've got to be judicious. And he's like, no, it means masks work. You know, it's like.
No, like, okay. But, like, yeah, you see this happening. And, like, this is a great segue into, like, this is the fucking Frankenstein these people have created.
That's
like,
exactly right.
like they have they created this mess. Like they played a part in boosting these protests, in boosting these anti-masker conspiracies, you know, boosting these reopen protests back in, you know, April, March, April, May, June, like all fucking summer long. And like now you're getting around to telling people to wear a mask. And it's like, you know, like with Mastriano, we'll talk about this later on, but like, you know, with Mastriano, what's happening down in Georgia, like you fucking created this, these people, like on steroids. Like you created this fucking mess. Like you had a, you played an active role in like doing this, and it's like you don't get a pass. I mean, great, you're telling your viewers to wear masks, but you should have been doing this back in March,
right?
Like when everyone else was saying it.
Exactly. Well, and it's like, you know, and now it's kind of exploded.
Now like Fox News is irrelevant because of OAN and.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's like
Newsmax.
That's exactly right. It's like, you know, again, I think that, you know, Fox News.
Like, what's going to happen to Fox News? Like, I honestly think like they can go under.
They might.
They're fucking base. Like, they either have to triple down on their politics, or go harsh to the center.
Yeah, they have to
moderate
themselves. I mean, they have to go direct competition with CNN. Right, to try to kind of take that space, right? Or like you said, but I don't know if there's. Here's the problem though with Fox News, right? Is like if they go too far right, if they follow Newsmax and that kind of stuff, that's a real risk for them too as well, right?
Because I mean, Newsmax and OAN are going to cannibalize Fox News.
Oh, that's absolutely right. Well, you're already seeing there's like, you know,
within the next 3 or 4 years.
Right. There were the Trumpers down like in Arizona, right? The Trumpers down in Arizona and kind of a bunch of other states that were
saying,
you know,
Fox News sucks.
Fox News sucks, right? They're basically, because Fox News was one of the first to call Arizona for Biden, that basically said, wait a minute, you are not a believer, right? You are not a believer. You are actually part of the conspiracy. Attempt to undermine Trump. You are part of the global cabal, the pedophilia cabal.
And now, like, Newsmax and OAN numbers are just spiking through the roof.
Right off the charts. Yeah,
because of this, like, yeah. No, I mean, like, I could see Fox News going under because of this. Real fast.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting. It's going to be very interesting what's going to happen.
Like, do they just triple down on their fucking like white nationalist rhetoric, or do they get Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity out of there? Because I could honestly see them leaving for Newsmax or OAN.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Sean Hannity. I don't know about Tucker Carlson. I think Tucker Carlson's got some other ambitions. That Fox News is a sweet spot for him because he basically can keep on a certain cloak. I mean, again, this is all relatively speaking, but a cloak of respectability, right? I mean, you know, Tucker Carlson is very smart in terms of how he uses that platform for what he wants, right? You know, one.
Yeah, I mean, he fucking blew up Sidney Powell's spot.
Yep. Right.
Yeah.
He's able to kind of go after that and put on this mantle of, like, you know, truthiness, right? Every once in a while. But at the same time, he uses all the narratives of kind of white supremacy and white nationalism as a way of kind of, you know, signaling to that group. So it gives, you know, and I do believe that those organizations, right, to kind of say, you know, the organized white nationalist, right, see Tucker Carlson as an ally within the mainstream media. I think that's how they kind of understand that. And I think he helps cultivate that dynamic. So, you know, whether or not he actually runs, you know, there's these polls that came out kind of not too long ago, but he was offered as the front runner, right, for a Republican candidate for president in 2024, right? Whether or not he has those ambitions, I have no idea. But when you see a poll like that, there's a big question about how did his name ever even emerge? Like, how did that question, how was that question
floating
phrased?
His name out there?
Exactly. Right. And so that tells me that he's got some people that are putting out feelers for that. Now, whether or not this is coming directly from Tucker Carlson himself, or if it's going to be people that are going to try to recruit him to run, that's a, you know, unknown question at this point. But But anyways, yeah, I do think this weekend, and what we're seeing right now in Georgia, I think is the, we're watching, you know, the Frankenstein monsters, you know, have their moment, right?
Because, oh, I mean, this happened in Pennsylvania this week too. I mean, a bunch of fucking people show up to the Capitol with no masks, and we're screaming at Republican Senate staffers for, and calling them unpatriotic and un-American for not calling your people back and pass these resolutions to overturn the election.
Absolutely. And there's going to be,
when they just couldn't.
Right. And there's, and the thing is like, once you establish, I mean, once you're a member of a cult, right, it's like, you know, when the election is over, you just don't go like, okay, now back
cult to doesn't go away.
No, you're a believer. Right. And so that also means that they're going to have long memories. So they're going to, you know, some of these folks are really at risk of paying a price at the polls in like 2022. Right. But from Democrats, right? But from Republicans. I have a big question right now about,
I wonder, do you get like moderate Republicans in the suburbs taken out by the cult members? And you just lose those seats for good?
It could be. I mean, I have a big question about, look, it depends how bitter Trump is going to be. I mean, look, the guy is the most spiteful pieces of shit that's ever occupied that office. But the thing is like, is he, with the Republicans now having to tech, this is the dynamic I've been watching all week. All right. I've been thinking this through, and why what's happening in Georgia kind of fascinates me so much is because Republicans who are concerned about staying in their office, right, keeping their job long term, right, they're faced with this. They've been all like hook, line, and sinker in with Trump. Right. They have like they have been the shield to his like spit sword. Right. And they've been everything that Trump he owes it 100% to the Republican Party. Right. They are the ones who had defended. They are the ones who had attacked it, and they've protected him every step of the way. So but now they're increasingly being linked to Trump. Right. Even if you're just talking about what's happening with the pandemic, right? So now they're faced with the question, is like, okay, how long do I stay on this crazy train, right? And now they're starting to break from that crazy train, and Trump is increasingly getting pissed off at those Republicans. Now, if those Republicans, you know, look, again, think mob boss, right? If those Republicans...
I'm surprised Bill Barr hasn't been fired yet.
Yeah, but Barr's playing a dual game.
Barr's gonna be the one that can get your buddies out of fucking trouble.
Barr's the one who's gonna be like, we're playing the long game here. I'm sure that's what he's doing with Trump. He's like, yes, I understand I had to say that, but look what we're doing over here. Look what we're doing over here. This is how we're gonna kind of do this. But Trump is gonna get increasingly pissed off, and that is gonna get transferred onto the Republican Party. Right? So to what extent will Trump, if not directly, at least indirectly, encourage the establishment of a third party, right? Of challengers that are outside of the Republican Party, right? Because if you look at what's going on in Georgia right now, right, there were like hundreds of people at that rally without masks, of course, right? Showing that they were true believers, basically saying that unless the Republican candidates for Senate, unless Loeffler and what the hell is the other guy's name?
Purdue,
yeah. How can I forget Purdue's name? Unless Loeffler and Purdue come out calling for like the overturning of the election and then like getting rid of all these machines and like, you know, exercising the ghost of Hugo Chavez, right? All this other kinds of stuff, then they should not vote for them. That they have not.
Well, Purdue called Biden president-elect the other day, or said Biden won. So
what's that?
I think Purdue came out last night and said Biden won. So.
Yeah, all those people, you can guarantee pretty much that they will not vote for him now, right? And that's exactly what goes on. So what happens? What happens with all this kind of like cult energy that's going on in the country right now, right? I don't think it's going to be an easy move for the Republican Party in some locations, right, to actually pivot and then say, okay, we're going to keep you on board with us.
These people are like also like attacking. I mean, we're seeing here in Pennsylvania, these Republicans, like now that like, the people who have been calling in their offices for weeks about conspiracy theories on end are now calling back and threatening them.
Exactly. Exactly.
For not overturning this fucking election.
Exactly.
And like the Facebook comments and like the,
yep.
the House Speaker Cutler had to come out, Benioff had to come out, make statements, and they're just like, fuck you from these people. I mean, like, this is also, like, you fucking created this mess in state. Like, you could have just, like, allowed pre-canvassing to happen even a week before the election. Like, allow pre-canvassing as a fucking compromise.
Yep.
Because most of the ballots would have been counted by then. We would have had a really clear idea who would have won and stuff like that. Like, allow for pre-canvassing. Like, but no, they allowed these and they were fueling these controversies and these conspiracy theories up to the very end. But yeah.
It'd be fascinating to see what happens. I mean, I feel like I'm,
I think these people are going to lash the fuck out. I don't know where at or who, but like.
Yeah, I think that's unknown at this point. I mean, you know, again, what the Republican Party has been able to do as an organization up until now, right, is they basically to say, look, you've got this group of people that you were just going to whip into a frenzy, right? You're going to whip them into a frenzy around whatever freaking conspiracy theory, whatever the hell it is, right, this. And then when you need to direct the attention in a particular way, right, but able to move in one kind of one angle or another. A lot of that has been facilitated by all this outside money, by the billionaires, by the Koch brothers and all this stuff as a vehicle by which to kind of direct things in one, you know, area or another. And I don't mean to kind of like, you know, suggest that all these people are just like just a herd of sheep, but I think that has been the way that
I don't think you'll be able to control the cult anymore.
That's the point, right? The point is, like, you know, the sheep have grown horns now, right? The sheep have grown horns now, and they're like, why are we in this freaking pen, right? The shepherd is the enemy. You know, it's like that's kind of where we're at. And so what happens at that point, right? And this is what, you know, and it's not as if, right, you know, like if Donald Trump, right, if Donald Trump is the Frankenstein monster, right, at the top, right, that was created by the Republican Party, right, you basically got all kind of like little mini Frankensteins running around all over the place now. So it's not just as simple as kind of getting rid of the Trump at the top, which is one of the reasons why we have been always saying that it is not enough to run on Trump bad man, right? Trump bad man is not like a winning message for the long haul, right? But
so I think, do we want to talk about our own Frankenstein next or take a break soon?
What, Mastriano?
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, but before, let me just say a couple things and then I want to get your take on one thing before we take a break. So the one thing is like, one, I'm going to be increasingly paying attention as, you know, making sure that we're following what's going on to climate stuff, because I think that's going to be one of the areas that we're going to need to pressure the Biden administration more than others. Okay. So I would encourage folks hitting in the show notes for today's show. Check out there's an article there from the Washington Post, but there's also a link to the UN State of the Climate Report. I know it's not going to be with the kind of thing that you want to put on your kind of holiday reading list, but you should, because I really believe we need to be ingraining that report, right, in our brains, right, and facing that stark reality, because there's going to be a lot of maneuvering that's happening in kind of like the political sphere, particularly among the Democratic Party and so on, to kind of about messaging and blah, 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 blah. But for those of us in the kind of progressive and the left, right, we need to be clear about the crisis as it's in front of us. And that report is frightening. So as has been every report for the last like 6 years, but this one in particular. But before we go to break, what I want to say, so I'm curious your take, just some of your takes on some of the Biden appointees, right? And like I said, you know, we talked a little about this before the show, and I think that the reason why I kind of put it down in there is because I thought that was a worthwhile kind of like mini discussion around
it. I mean,
because like, there's a lot of, I'll tell you right now, because a lot of what's happening in, say, cable news here and things like this is like following that kind of like, you know, like this appointment and that appointment and so on like that. So I'm just curious.
I feel like it's like whatever. I don't have any, like, I did not set up a bar for like who he picks. I feel like he's picking people who are better than Obama picked. Like, I mean, we're still getting like more established Democrats, but like, I think Janet Yellen is a solid pick, competent. Like, he's picking competent people, and he's not picking people like Geithner or Rahm Emanuel and stuff like that yet. At least.
Yet. So.
I mean,
yeah, I think, I mean, my take on it, the whole thing is what I was saying, you know, when we were talking before the show too. Is,
and
like,
also I feel like the story with, like, I think it's just stupid covering Bernie Twitter from here on
I
out.
I don't even, that is like, so I think
Holly Otterbein is a really great journalist. She's a really good writer. But, like, I really think it's just stupid for Politico to pursue those stories. Like, what the fuck are you, like, what benefit does it serve writing about a story about, like, Bernie Twitter being upset about Neera Tanden?
It doesn't even make sense. I mean, it doesn't even
make
sense.
I mean, there's legitimate reasons to actually be upset with her, too.
No, we'll talk about her in a second, right? Because it's like, but I think that, I agree with you 100%. I mean, I'm watching some of the stuff like, well, Bernie, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, this is like, you've missed the boat, right? Covering that is like, you're as stuck in, like, you know, the 2016 primary, right? You know, as everyone else. I mean, there's activists that come out of the Bernie movement who are getting elected to office. They're organizing on thing, and like, to be focusing on, like, the sniping on Twitter by some of these, you know, kind of like, you know, Bernie Twitter, whatever. It's just, it makes no freaking sense. And it is like, it's the same kind of stuff where people get, you know, locked into irrelevant conversations because they can't get out of them. And they think that's the center of the universe, and it's just not, right? I mean, look, like it or not, look, I have been a Bernie supporter. I campaigned for Bernie, right? I support Bernie. I wanted Bernie, right? All that kind of stuff. But you know what? That's done. And, like, you know, I never looked to Bernie as my cult leader either, right? I believe politicians are politicians, right? And the eye, we got to, in order to keep the eye on the ball, we need to keep the eye on the movements, right? If we put our faith in any one individual, whatever. And so if those folks, you know, who are kind of like, you know, like Bernie or bust forever, who want to kind of, I don't know, keep like Bernie in kind of some sort of kind of like, you know, permanent.
But like, I don't even care about that. Like, why? But like, why are you even covering that story from a fucking journalist standpoint?
No, but that's my point. My point is, like, those people are going to do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And so it's irrelevant to where the conversation is.
Yeah. It's just like,
it is absolutely irrelevant. And that I'm not knocking Bernie or other kind of people who worked on. I'm just saying, like, that is not where the conversation is right now or needs to be. Right. I mean, you've got like, youth activists in the Sunrise Movement that are doing freaking amazing work and pushing policy agendas in ways that nobody else can move. That's more interesting, right? You look at what's happening with the squad, right? And what is going to happen kind of moving forward. That's going to be important, right? But that kind of garbage, that's gossip. That is gossip column crap.
Yeah.
So whatever. But I think, you know, my take on the this is what I just want to kind of get off my chest, I guess, on the Biden picks is, like, number one, I watch like Chris Hayes' show and Rachel Maddow's show and things like this, not because I believe that they're right or anything like this. I think sometimes they got some really good stories, but it gives you a really good perspective on where the kind of like mainline kind of Democratic Party kind of focus is at. Right. And the conversations that seemed relevant. And so much of that discussion has been either on the pardon stuff, right, or on these appointments. And one with the pardon stuff, I'm thinking, like, what's there really to do about that? Right. And the people who are going to do something are going to be doing things about it. Right. Yes, it's an outrage or whatever, but surprise, welcome to freaking the Trump administration. I mean, I don't know what, why is this any newer? And then when you talk about the appointments, like, I've been, what happens, like, Sam Cedar in the Majority Report, I think, has been really kind of good on this, right? About saying, like, okay, look, here we're going to get these kind of appointments. This person is better than that person. But, you know, even Emma Viglin, who's, you know, on the show now, is like, you know, I'm right on board with her perspective on this. It's like, look, from the baseline that we thought about a Biden administration, you know, these are relatively decent picks, right? But from my perspective, is like, I wasn't expecting much. I mean, yeah. I never thought, I mean, and you just go back, listen to the show, right? And when Sean and I talk about this, like, we see, like, Biden is like the caretaker. Biden is like, he ran on not Trump, and that's why I voted for him, right?
We're not getting Larry Summers. We're not getting.
Which is all good, right?
Not getting Guttner. We're not getting.
Those are good things, right? And I think that Sam Cedar said it best. The most important thing about these picks, right, with the exception of Neera Tanden, which we'll talk about her and then we'll wrap up. With the exception of her, the vast majority of appointments in there, I'm not thinking of anybody else that comes off of my mind, right? They're not hostile to the left, right? That's the difference between someone like Rahm Emanuel. Right? Rahm Emanuel is hostile to the left. He went after the left, wanted to destroy the left, right? Publicly would kind of like, you know, lambaste the left, right? Most of these picks, right, are not hostile to the left. That doesn't mean that they're progressive or they're leftist, but it means that there's more opportunity to move them from a movement perspective. That's it, right? Anira Tandem, this is the one thing I have to say about it. The most disturbing thing about her appointment to me is, like, you know, I'm not going to get into all the personality garbage, all the gossip, you know, stuff, the kind of Twitterverse on her. But it was,
she's just a horrible human being.
She's a horrible human being. She's a union buster with like, you know, Center for American Progress, and she's like, you know, she's got her minions that go after, you know, whatever. I mean, it's just like, we could go on and on about that.
She's developed a lot of power in DC to like just fucking tank people's careers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Over stuff.
I mean,
over horrible, trivial bullshit.
Right. And has been willing to be like a neoliberal warrior, right? You know, whether or not she's personally committed to it, what's in her heart, who the hell knows? It's what she does. So the big point there with Neera Tandem is that apparently the Biden campaign, when they picked Neera Tandem, or kind of were saying they're going to nominate her to be what's the Office of Budget Management, is that right? That started to get a whole bunch of pushback from progressives, and apparently that took them back a little bit. That there was it was unattributed from the Biden campaign, but they said there was some concern about the pushback because the Biden campaign thought that Neera Tandem, by picking Neera Tandem, it was going to be a gift like to the AOC wing of the party, which shows there was a complete disconnect with actually what's happening on the ground. That's one of the biggest concerns, right? It shows you where their mindset is and what they think. Who are the, say, where's the progressive base in the party? That's, I think, the biggest concern there.
Yeah.
But anyways. All right. So, yeah. So we're not going to go into all the little different picks because, you know what? It's going to sort itself out. We're going to talk a little bit more about it later. Our focus is going to stay on the movements. All right. Anything else for the good of the order at this point, Sean?
Nothing really.
All right. So
the Pennsylvania Senate Dems just released a $4 billion coronavirus package.
So. Cool. Let's talk about that on the flip side. And we'll also talk about our little homegrown fascist too as well, coming up here. All right. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Want to remind you, you can go to kind of patreon.com/RC Press to become a patron today. But while you're sitting there, if you're listening to this on a podcast, make sure you get over to our YouTube page and kind of like us and subscribe to the YouTube channel. So every time that we go live, that you get that little ting. Make sure you hit the subscribe button and you hit that little bell, right? So you get a notification. So when we go live, that you can kind of join us in the live show too as well. That'd be fantastic. And leave us reviews. Leave us reviews in our podcast. If you listen to us on iTunes, give us that 5-star rating. Give us a good review. That helps other people find our podcast. Or if you get your podcast elsewhere, wherever you get your podcast, kind of like and review. That would be freaking awesome. But in the meantime, you want to help support this show. You want to help the expansion of this show and Out to Coop Live interview show. Patreon.com/RC Press. You become a patron for as little as $5 a month. We'd appreciate it. We'll be back on the flip side just a moment.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1833. That was the day that prominent abolitionists convened in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to found the American Anti-Slavery Society. They drew up a constitution demanding an immediate end to slavery. They also demanded full civil rights for people of color. These activists distinguished themselves from the American Colonization Society, which advocated repatriation of free blacks to Liberia. Coming off the heels of the Nat Turner Rebellion in 1831, much of the society's work consisted of organizing petitions, meetings, and lecture tours. These activities emphasized slavery's brutality and inhumanity and its immoral nature. They also printed and distributed anti-slavery literature like the National Anti-Slavery Standard newspaper. The society claimed 250,000 members by 1840. They formed 2,000 local chapters and published 20 journals. Founders included included prominent abolitionists like William Lloyd Garrison, Arthur and Lewis Tappan, Theodore Weld, and many Quakers and free blacks. Fiery orators like Frederick Douglass and the Grimke sisters soon emerged as key leaders. These anti-slavery fighters endured mob violence, including riots and even murder, like that of Elijah Lovejoy in 1837. The society split in 1840. Garrison condemned the U.S. Constitution for its denial of freedom to African Americans. He and his supporters pushed for secession from the South if they would not abolish slavery. They also promoted women into leadership positions. More conservative elements considered this too radical. They split to form the American and Foreign Anti-Slavery Society. Despite this, the abolitionist movement grew exponentially. Anti-slavery ideas gained traction in new political parties.
Welcome back to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. I'm here once again with Sean Kitchen, our favorite asymptomatic coup survivor. And right before we went to the break, Sean just got some breaking news. Sean, what was the news that came across the wire?
Senate Democrats, Pennsylvania Senate Democrats, they introduced the $4 billion COVID package. So it's probably going to be helping out renters and stuff like that, unemployment. So.
Let's hope. Yeah. So we'll take a look at that. We don't know a whole lot of the details of that right now, but it'd be something to be watching in the week coming ahead. Absolutely. So, our favorite little fascist. here we go, man. Go with it.
So, I think watching. Did you watch Wednesday's hearing?
I watched a little bit of it. I watched
the beginning of it live. I watched like the first 45 minutes of it, right? And just like that's all I could just like, all right, I'm fucking finished. Just that first 45 minutes, probably like one of the most telling things in Pennsylvania politics over the past couple of years. And that is that the whole entire caucus, the Senate Republican caucus, and the Republican Party bent the fucking knee for Mastriano and his run for 2022. Like, as dangerous and as silly as that press conference was, like, they bent the fucking knee for this guy to run for governor in 2022. And, like, this guy is a straight-up demagogue, straight-up cult leader, I think he's way worse than Scott Wagner. Like, we've been following him for months, been saying this for months. They gave him too much fucking power. They allowed him and Russ Diamond to really just take over the coronavirus response, which is filled with bullshit and conspiracy theories about wearing masks and misinformation about the disease itself. And like, they allowed those two people in general over the past like several months just take off the message and run with it on coronavirus, not keep these people in check. And like what happened last Wednesday, like, was the culmination of that. Like, you know, Mastriano's fucking online presence is massive. Like, he, like, the and like that. I mean, like, what else can we say besides that last week? I mean, besides like the batshit crazy stuff that was said during the hearing, I don't even remember like half the shit that was said. But like the fact that like the Senate leadership allowed this to happen,
right,
in the way that it did, was very embarrassing for like the actual institution in itself.
Well, it shows you who they are, right? I mean, that for me was like you were posting those pictures, right? You're posting the pictures from inside that thing. Not that those were not your pictures. You were not there inside like the super spreader event, right? But you kind of were tweeting those out that and there were hallways packed with people with no masks on, right? And it was like, it looked like a Trump rally, right? People had their Trump gear all over the place. Like, there's one picture of like someone in a walker without a mask in the midst of all this stuff, you know? I mean, I was waiting to see a picture of someone dragging oxygen tanks behind them with no mask. I mean, that's the kind of thing it was. And that, all of that is 100% on the Pennsylvania Republican Senate caucus.
And then Mastriano had COVID, came down with COVID. Senator Judy Ward came down with COVID. Like, God knows who else came down with fucking COVID.
That was well-timed cough, Sean.
That was not a COVID cough. But like, who?
Sorry.
But like, who else was there? I mean, they had this before Thanksgiving, right? Like the day before Thanksgiving. How many people got infected, took that shit home to their families, like, and were at that event?
Yeah.
Like that is a super spreader event. And like, how many people in the Senate caucus, the staff members they put at risk, like the general public, like, yeah, it was just absolutely insane that like the Senate allowed this to happen. And like, it literally took a fucking week after this for like the Senate Republicans to fucking come up with a response.
Let me just give these numbers here just so people can see this, just at the COVID thing, right? So on November 24th, right, the number of reported cases, right, in the state of Pennsylvania was 8,362. As of today, the latest numbers, 11,268. Right? Now, obviously, you cannot draw a straight line between all of those increases in cases, but between that and that event, right? But the messaging that came out of that and what was encouraged by those people, and as you said,
not
rightfully,
a single person,
right?
Only one person wore a mask, and that was Judy Ward.
Exactly. Or Kim Ward.
Yeah.
This was basically saying that all the advice, right, and you know, all the transphobic crap that has been kind of like, you know, thrust at Rachel Levine, right? And all this, they were kind of dismissing her calls for people to stay home for Thanksgiving and all this, and that event only amplified that message. And now we're seeing record numbers of cases, and we're going to see record numbers of deaths by Christmas. That is all on the PAGOP, right? So I mean, this is like what is happening in Pennsylvania right now is it's not that different from the shit show we're seeing down there in Georgia. The difference is that Sidney Powell and like L. Lynn, whatever, right? Those like batshit crazy folks were lawyers. In the state of Pennsylvania, these are elected officials leading that same charge.
In a partisan policy committee hearing.
Exactly.
And now we're starting to see some of the response from, you know, like Senator Aument and Senator Scott Martin put out an op-ed attacking the disinformation, and they called out the resolutions. They called out Mastriano and Russ Diamond by name, like, you know, for doing this
great
stuff.
Great timing on that, guys.
Where were you, I don't know, 7 months ago? Like, I mean, we were talking about this months ago with the Doar brothers, right?
Exactly.
Doar brothers started these Facebook groups in Pennsylvania and a few other states that now have like hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of members in them. And Mastriano, his Facebook online presence, fucking exploded in these Facebook groups. And the amount of disinformation Mastriano was able to spread, and the platform Mastriano has been able to build because of these Facebook groups, because of these reopen groups, you know, these anti-lockdown groups that sprang out of nowhere, you know, in a coordinated effort across the country, has really thrusted him into this position right now. And he's taken this demagoguery to a whole new level, and it's dangerous. I mean, he is an absolute threat to Pennsylvania if he gets the nomination for governor.
Well, this is why I thought that what the York Dispatch did, right, with kind of like calling him out in that particular way was really important. Right. I mean, I think that's, you know, again, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, that's going to have the, you know, make or break thing. But I mean, to see that at this point now. Right. Not in the kind of like, you know, days before the election. Right. As we've seen here. It's like, oh, yeah, by the way, that guy's crazy. Probably not a good idea. That's too late.
I mean, I think now it's too late.
Well, it's too late in terms of him maybe getting the nomination. It's not necessarily too late in terms of, getting like organizing around.
It's about containment now. Like, it's about, I mean, if you're the Republicans, he gets the nomination. Do you support him? Like, institutional Republicans. I mean, well, a lot of institutional Republicans didn't really support Scott Wagner in 2018.
Well, we'll see.
I mean, is that the case if you have a Josh Shapiro running? You like just running.
But here's the deal. Here's the deal, right? I'm sorry. I am not in the camp of like, well, let's see which Republicans like you know what? Put up or shut up at this point. You're going to have to do the work to show that you are on board, which means like you're not just going to like tell a reporter, well, I'm not in favor of Doug Mastriano. No, you need to be out there campaigning against him.
Campaigning, knocking doors.
Exactly.
Writing checks.
Exactly. You need to be out there campaigning against him. If you believe this guy is a proto-fascist, if you believe this guy is a tyrant, if you believe that there's no way that this guy should be elected, it is not enough to tell a reporter in some sort of like, you know.
I mean, like the whole entire South Central Caucus in Pennsylvania have solidified support for Mastriano. Like everyone, the Republicans in Dauphin County, well, not Dauphin, but like in Cumberland, Franklin, Adams, York. I mean, this whole entire region has fucking thrown her support behind Mastriano wholeheartedly. And you've seen that, like, with the last – I mean, like, they all bent the fucking knee to him last week.
No, exactly. And I'll tell you what, I'm sick and tired of being in a situation too. This is a message for state Democrats too as well. It's like your job at this point, right, Connor Lambs of the world, like your job at this point is not to sit there and find the good Republicans that you can just work with. No, your job at this point is to pressure those quote unquote good Republicans to freaking get out there and campaign or say like, we're done. Right, it's like we're not going to sit here and go bolster up your reputation, and we're not going to sit there and kind of like prop you up as somehow the good Republican when you refuse to take an active stand against a freaking proto-fascist. No, sorry, we've done that. We've been there. Remember that Trump thing? That's what that was all about. That was them. That was us learning the lesson, right? That we cannot get behind the good Republicans because the good Republicans stood with Trump. And that cannot happen here in Pennsylvania. And those Republicans who like to kind of have that kind of like, we're moderate, we love to work with it, they need to get that message now. You want to really send a message? Switch freaking parties. Become a Democrat. Also, how about that? If you believe that big, help us flip the Senate. How do you flip the Senate? Well, then you say, this is it. This Republican Party, I can no longer stand behind. I'm going to be a Democrat, and then I'm going to caucus with the Democrats. How about that? You want to really send a message? That's how you do it. Not with your freaking, like, you know, like good relationships with blah, blah, blah. Give me a break. Sorry. Well, like, I had to get that off my chest because that's going to drive me freaking nuts coming up.
I mean, like, here in Pennsylvania, we have a civility caucus, you know, growing in the PA House. I don't know how many people are going to be in it, but one of the people spearheading this is Greg Rothman, who was at the fucking Super Spreader event last week.
Well, but yeah, you know. He was very civil at it though, Sean. He did not use bad language. He was polite. He said thank you when he ordered coffee.
Yeah, you know, he helped spread COVID throughout central Pennsylvania by not wearing a mask, by encouraging businesses to open up. You know, and like
when he got like, COVID, right? Did he get COVID?
No, he didn't.
He didn't get
but
COVID.
But we're not like, but like we don't. Like,
do you think he would say thank you if he got it?
I don't think so. But like here, but my question is like. Why the fuck should we lick these people's boots?
Got
like,
me.
You know, like they tried to steal an election. They tried very actively to steal an election. They made it fucking clear that they went to steal an election. They're going to disenfranchise voters when they come back in October. Are you going to call us a person? And they're going to pass shit budgets. Is them just doing it in a nice way civility?
No.
Like, fuck these people.
So, okay, I'll give you a preview for folks for our Monday Out to Coop Live, you know, like if it ends up being a call-in show. One of the things, I wrote this piece kind of a few years back about exactly this stuff. This was after the Tea Party stuff about this kind of civility garbage. So one of the things that we'll spend a little bit of time is I will kind of take you back to this and kind of walk you through kind of this the problem of this kind of civil discourse garbage. And yesterday at Kutztown University, by the way, Judy Swank met with what's a dude's name? Arnott? What's his name? Ardell. Representative Ardell? Huh?
No. Slashberg? No.
No. It's a shit. He represents part of the same district. Let me. I'm gonna forget his name. Ardell. Isn't it Ardell?
Argel. Senator Argel.
Senator Argel. My bad.
David Argel.
Right, David. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. They were at Kutztown celebrating having a civic discourse discussion over here. And I unfortunately had to go to another meeting. Otherwise, I would have been at that to talk a little bit about it. But anyways, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail.
It's amazing how these fucking Democrats are going right to having like civility conversations with the Republicans. After they spent a month freaking out about the election, like, and like they spent the past 7 months doing absolutely nothing about COVID and being responsible for where we're at right now. And we got to talk about civility with these fucking people. Like, give me a break.
Look, civility, civility needs a baseline, right? The only way you get civility is if you are willing participants on the same.
You need willing participants from both sides to be civil. Like when like there's one side that's not willing to be civil, then like you just can't have like.
No, it's worse than that, Sean. It's worse than that. Like you have to agree at the baseline rules about what democracy is about, right? You have to fundamentally agree about you have to commit to things like this, facts, shared facts, and agreement that kind of reality matters, right? That part of the goal of things is to basically be working for the best information that we have. And then, yes, you're going to have disagreements over it, right? But you have to be willing to at least live in a fact-based world, right? That's your baseline. And you have to basically say that, okay, in democracy, it's not just like power politics all the time for whatever reason, and we'll use whatever. You have to have some sort of commitment that your words are attached to kind of like a legitimate argument, right? That is kind of like, you know, is purposeful and is meaningful and is connected to the real world. And if all you give a shit about is that you can talk, this is what drives me nuts, is that you can use civil discourse, right, to provide a cloak over the most fascist, brutal, racist, sexist policies out there. And by performing civility is not the same thing as civility. And this has been the problem, is I think that what Democrats too often, what they mistake the performance of civility for civic discourse. Those things are not the same. I teach my students all the time. It's like, look, if you want to try to kind of like pull the wool over somebody's eyes, right? But through argumentation. Right. You don't do that by kind of through some off the cuff screed, right, based upon just your opinion and wild ideas. No, you make it look like a well-researched paper. Right. You use a reasoned tone. Right. You use all the conventions of academic discourse. You consider the other side. But at the baseline, if you just don't give a shit about actually caring about facts and reality,
everything you do is in bad faith.
Right. And you make, this is what the right wing has done. If you wonder why.
And it's also the Democratic Party's fucking complete failure to even acknowledge that this exists.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, they've showed you who they, I mean, like the Republicans, especially in Harrisburg, have just been upending norms and just been fucking animals for the past 10 years, and they went as far as trying to steal a fucking election, like, and disenfranchise 3.5 million voters, like Democrats, 3.46 million Democratic voters.
Right.
Like,
and Sean is not just talking about some sort of like feeling that was in the air. No, they actually had meetings to strategize. They had lawsuits to try to steal the election, right? They actively participated in organized attempts to undermine the election.
Months of lawsuits leading up to the election. And then like lawsuits to throw out the election afterwards.
Right. So we're not talking about what we heard people say. No, this is what they did.
In every fucking court possible. throughout the state. Like,
and where were all those good Republicans standing up and actively campaigning against them and threatening to bring down the caucus if they would pursue anti-democratic measures? Oh, wait a minute. I think I've got it right here. That's it. Crazy, man.
Yeah, fuck out of here with this bullshit. That's all I got to say.
I'm with you, man. 100%. 100%, obviously.
Sorry, but there's a lot of things that need to change in Harrisburg. And this, like, fake notion of, like, bipartisanship that exists has to be one of them. Like, it has to be the first thing to change. It is like Democrats, like, living, it's just Stockholm Syndrome. Like, you are just, like, going along with your captors at this point. Like, you are, like, ceding power to them before you even get into the fucking session by, like, bending the knee to them for civility. Like, no, you have to, like, fucking show it at this point. And they can't even do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a lot of ideas and thoughts about this, but I'm not going to go into them all at this point. But I do agree 100%.
I'm done rant.
Yeah, there's too deep of a hole that I can go down in this one. But I agree with you 100%. And I think that, you know, here's my brightsiderism, right? Is that, you know, you look at some of the progressives that were elected to office. Right. Yes, we did not get everyone that we should have, and for reasons that we've talked about in previous podcasts. But we've got some kind of the expansion of, you know, this kind of like squadron of progressives, right? Like this battalion of progressives now at the state level, which is phenomenal. So we can start to expand that, you know, and amplify the efforts of the folks that are really working to change this, because I think there are an increasing number of people that have been willing to disrupt that. We saw that around the kind of the Me Too movement, right? We saw that kind of in the hearings that were held before. We see this in people like Katie Muth, for example, right? Who are willing to kind of say, like, I'm not going to bow to civility.
Oh, also, congrats for Katie Muth for getting elected to leadership. I don't think we were.
Yeah, we talked about that. That was our last show. Yep.
Okay, it happened like the day before.
Yep. Exactly. Huge. Yeah, she got elected, and then we have our first like African American woman, right? Head of the caucus, which is great. Phenomenal.
Highest ranking African American female ever in state Pennsylvania politics as minority leader. So
crazy. Oh God, what else you want to talk about on this one?
I'm pretty much done on that.
I think everything else we have is pretty much like connected. I'm looking at, we've got it here.
I think we talked about everything a couple of times.
A couple of times, yeah, which is good. One thing I already talked about. So one thing I will add, and if you have anything else you want to kind of throw into as well, is that there's some major stuff that is coming up with the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education. Things are starting to get really, really intense, and the rubber's going to start hitting the road pretty soon. So, we had another deadline that passed on December 1st for retrenchments. There was one deadline that was back in October. That was the one. I think there were like several hundred, I want to say over 400 letters of retrenchment that kind of went out. I think that number came down a bit, but that was it kind of initially. From my understanding, there was only one additional letter that went out. And it looks like IUP is really taking the brunt of it in all of this. There's also lots of questions being raised about the consolidation plans of these different universities. To recall that there's, you know, I think it's what, Mansfield, Lock Haven, and Bloom? No. Mansfield, Lock Haven, I forget the third now. But kind of in the center of the state. And then you've got, maybe just those two, Mansfield and Lock Haven. And then you've got California, Edinburgh, and Slippery Rock? God, I should know this off the top of my head. But I'm looking for consolidation out there too as well. And Chancellor Greenstein is really basically showing his cards, is that, you know, this dude doesn't give a shit about people. Right? Doesn't give a shit about jobs and the impacts on communities and things like this. This is, you know, Silicon Valley come to come to PA. You know,
I think you're right about that.
A few times. I wrote about that. Let me see. When his candidacy or when his appointment was announced, maybe. Right? Yeah. Back at the very beginning. Right, when everybody still wanted to give him a chance because he's such a nice guy. Chancellor McDreamy, well, turns out that he's just a slick version of the previous chancellor. So, or not actually Brogan. Brogan was like an aberration because he was just such a fumbling idiot, even though he was like a horrible human being. But Chancellor Kavanaugh, the guy who came before him, was kind of a version of this, and this is a slick version of it. You know, I was listening to this. There's this great podcast I've been listening to. It's called Tech Won't Save Us. And there was just one of the most recent shows was about the gig economy. And, you know, I kept on thinking, like, if this guy had his druthers, this is what he would do with the state system of higher education, right? He basically turned all the faculty into freaking, like, the academic versions of Uber drivers. Right, when here, right? So not only would you get the kind of adjunctification of the state system of higher education that we've seen across the country, right? Turning like the vast majority of all faculty into kind of like piecemeal workers, right? It would all be done on an app. that's how we would do it. But anyways, we'll have more about that in the coming week. So anything else you want to throw into the mix, Sean?
No, nothing else.
All right, cool. We will be back right after this quick break. I want to remind you, you can go to patreon.com/rcpress and you become a patron today for as little as $5 a month. We'll see you on the flip side for this week's Let's Go! This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. It's our last call. We talk beer news. We talk space news. Whatever else is kind of on our minds. We talk some culture, what we've been watching, what we've been doing. Just a good way of kind of wrapping things out for the year. So let me start off with one thing. I've got a recommendation for folks. Sean, did you ever read his Dark Materials series? Like the Golden Nope. Compass or any of that stuff? I didn't think so. I'm just you know. It took real freaking work getting you just to watch the Lord of the Rings series. So it's like it took years of...
I actually like watched Lord of the Rings when they came out in the movies and was hooked from it since.
Oh, you were hooked for them back then?
Yeah, I watched...
Oh, okay.
And
just the Star Wars and the other stuff that you just can't quite tolerate.
I didn't care about Star Wars.
Yeah. Star Trek or any of that stuff, right? Okay.
I mean, like, yeah, so.
Well, his Dark Materials, what's interesting about this, okay, for those of you who don't know the series, like, it's a Golden Compass. It's like it's another trilogy that came out. But HBO has basically done a series on it. And it's actually really, really good. I'll be honest. I have not read the books. I bought them. You know, it was one of the kind of series that I bought for my kids. And It's they haven't read them yet either. It's like things got stacked up because we have so many books around the house. But like his Dark Materials series, it's a trilogy of like fantasy novels, and it's by this guy Philip Pullman. And there's the books Golden Compass, The Subtle Knife, and Amber Spyglass. Right, so there's these three books. The reason why I was always interested in it, and I bummed out that I never got around to it, is that, you know, Lord of the Rings and the Narnia books, right? Were both written kind of around like a secular Christianity, right? Very kind of overtly. Like they used to get together and they used to talk about C.S. Lewis and Tolkien. Used to get together, and they said that, you know, they were both really kind of, you know, very Christian. They were kind of like practicing. I believe Tolkien was Catholic. I'm not 100%, but they were very committed, say, Christians. And they thought that it was really important to have a secular version, right, of Christianity, right? A secular story that kind of picked up the themes about Christianity and so on. Very much you could see those themes kind of all throughout those books, right? So when Pullman basically came around, it was basically saying, like, you know, enough of this, right? And he wanted to come at this from a kind of an a-religious, if not anti-religious, kind of perspective, right? To put the wars of, say, religion against science, right? And so that becomes one of the motivating themes of the series, and which is one of the reasons why I always wanted to read it. Put that aside. In part, right, because that was kind of originally piqued my interest on this, why I started reading the Dark Materials kind of a while back. But the series came out of HBO, and it's actually really cool. It's like it deals with these kind of like parallel universes and things, but it takes place in a world in which like the soul, right, is like represented as a spirit animal, right, so that your soul is outside of your body. Right. And when you're a child, right, it's like this little animal that kind of switches forms and everything like this. But then as you kind of move into adulthood, it settles on a specific form. Right. So watching the show initially, like you're just getting used to the fact that there's these animals kind of all over the place and things. But it's kind of a really cool story. So if you're looking for I'm someone who believes like Lord of the Rings is a Christmas movie, right? So one of the things that I'll tend to do over the holidays, right, is kind of rewatch The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and all this kind of stuff. This is also kind of like nice to add to your list, right? So if you have HBO, you have HBO Now or any of the kind of those associated apps, you can check it out. It's worth a watch. I will tell you ahead of time, stick with it for at least a few episodes because at least it took me kind of a couple episodes just to kind of get my head around like the narrative world. But it's really cool. It's really cool. And it gets better and better and better as it goes on. So that's that. Just a couple quick things. There was a cool new research from scientists that have come out basically saying that there is a whole bunch of this like water that is embedded in this kind of like salty brine in Mars. And they're basically saying that, look, they've got these technologies now that can basically split those atoms away, right? The hydrogen and the oxygen and separate it. And that might actually prove to be a kind of a source of oxygen on the planet, which is, you know, number one. One of the things, water and oxygen and things like this are always some of the most important, I don't know, items that they look for, right? Necessary for life as they're moving on. And that's also connected to, say, Musk. Elon Musk is basically coming out. They've been teasing the launch of their new Starship, which is this ginormous rocket, which is the plan of it, right? The testing of it is the ship that will eventually, according to Musk, bring people to Mars, right? There's a whole bunch of other plans for it, but they've been going through a series of tests. They're just about to, I don't believe they tested it this week, but they're about to do the first testing of the full body of the Starship. He gives it like a 1 in 3 chance that it's actually going to be successful. I mean, if you know about rocket development, there's lots of kind of destruction that goes into actually making it work. But that is a big step forward on that. And he seems to be really geared up for getting to the moon by 2024. And if you recall, last time that we were on the show, we were looking at the Artemis program, which was under like Trump, like and Jim Bridenstine of NASA, were setting 2024 as the target to get people back on like on the ground in the moon. And what we talked about is what was most likely to happen under a Biden administration, that deadline was going to get pushed back. It wouldn't be abandoned, but the House has passed some kind of legislation about funding for the Artemis program that's slated to kind of go to 2028, to push that deadline to 2028. That was the original deadline. And what Musk, I think, is kind of like pushing back on that a little bit and basically say, no, we're gonna get there by 2024. So that's just be interesting to follow and see how it plays out. And I look forward to having some additional kind of sideshows. And you could take that in both senses of the meaning, focus specifically on some of this stuff on space stuff, because it's fun for me to do. And I know it bores the piss out of Sean. So yes. This is what it's
like. Well, like I looked outside and it's just like, I'm like, fuck, I wanted to get out before it just started raining. Like it was supposed to hold off till this afternoon, but it's like raining now. So
I'm sorry I ruined your day, Sean.
I know. Yep. Just all this space talk. Fucked up my walk for the afternoon.
See that? If I had just shut up about space, that would have been fine. But no,
it was supposed to hold off to like 2 or 3 o'clock, and I was hoping to get out, but looks like that ain't happening now.
Nope. Well, I just put a raincoat on, Sean. You know, there's actually whole countries that have lots of rain, and people actually go out in the rain anyways. They don't melt or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't feel like doing that. It's like, I mean, it's like a 45 degree.
Yeah, it's rain. An awful day to be out in rain, I know.
Yeah, so I got my coffee the other day and it was like fucking pouring out. Like,
not
in
good.
The morning. Yeah, I needed my coffee.
What are you going to do?
I will walk in the rain when it's like 30 degrees outside, 35.
When coffee. You have to.
Yeah.
So here are a couple things for Free Will releases. We always kind of try to kind of plug Free Will Brewing and what's going on over there. They've got a brand new batch of Cloudy with a Chance of Charcuterie. I could never say that word right. But it's, as you know, it's a fantastic beer. We've talked about a lot on the show. They've got kind of a new batch out that's ready kind of on their online store. They do also have some Ralphius and some Ella still remaining. They had that big release for Black Friday. They were kind of, you know, had cans and bottles were going out. There are still some left. So if you actually still want to get your hands on some of that, do go check it out. They've got actually this year is the first time that they put out lots of variety of cans of Ralphius. Right. So they still have like the mocha latte Ralphius in cans. They have the regular Ralphius. They have the sarsaparilla Ralphius, salted caramel Ralphius, s'mores Ralphius. I'll warn you ahead of time, they're a little on the pricey end, right? They come in at about $24 for, $24 to $32 for a 4-pack of cans. And those cans are smaller cans, right? They're 8.4-ounce cans. The reason why they come in as a small can is because they come in at about 15.6% ABV, right?
So I remember after the Super Bowl when the Eagles won.
I remember this.
I downed a Ralphius at like 12 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
I mean, it was in a 750 milliliter bottle too, I think. Yep. Or at least like a 16-ounce bottle. Not really sure, but it was good.
Did you wake up like a day later?
I woke up with such a hangover.
Yep.
Like, I couldn't eat all day type hangover.
Yep. So I'll warn you. So I say that for this year. So, one, if you decide you're going to go to it and it's 8.4-ounce can, like, the 8.4-ounce can is good for you. Just saying. It's good that it is not a 16-ounce can. I'm just saying. And so that's also why, you know, they do it here. But, you know, it's pricey, whatever. They do also still have some of the bottles. There's not as many of different varieties in the bottles, but they're still available on kind of an online store. And the one thing that I don't think I've ever plugged before of Free Will stuff, they've got some cool things out. They're great for the holidays too as well, if you want to go in a different direction. They started putting out bonbons this year, right? So they have Naked Ralphius chocolate bonbons, Naked Ralphius in coffee, in decadent chocolate, and in salted caramel. And they come in these nice little boxes, and those are about $12. Great gifts for the holidays. And they also have an awesome Ralphius base glass, right? It's an 11-ounce glass, which is really kind of like the perfect size for it. And if you remember, they also paired up with Speakeasy Coffee to actually put a Ralphius barrel age coffee that you can buy. That's an 8-ounce bag that comes in at $15. So some cool stuff for the holidays. Again, I always like to plug Free Will because, you know, they're right here in Perkasie, you know, kind of support kind of local stuff. Next week, I'm probably also going to be looking in a little bit to what's coming out down at Levante Brewing and some other local breweries in the area. If it wasn't for COVID, I was hoping that for the holidays that I was going to do some sampling of some of the local breweries. There's some places that I've been wanting to get to kind of in the area, but haven't because of, you know, the uptick in COVID and stuff. So we shall see. But do check that out. You can go to freewillbrewing.store. That's freewillbrewing.store. Check out their cans, check out their bottles and their merch. Pretty cool stuff. But other than that, Sean, what have you been up to, man? I mean, other than kind of like, you know, being really upset that you can't go outside anymore because it's raining. But what else you got going on?
I've been thinking about getting my deck in order.
What does that entail? Like, is like, I mean, structurally, is it like weak? And
well, it's like the only part of my apartment I really haven't like touched yet. So I think for like next year, I want to get like a couple tables, planners. You know, having like hanging planners and a grill on there. So thinking about like that, using it as a space where I can actually like sit down outside and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So
have you ever looked into it's like willow fencing?
No.
If you're looking to do anything kind of like on the privacy end of stuff, right. If you look at willow fencing, basically what it is, it's like, you know, dried kind of little thin kind of willow rods kind of like woven together that you could kind of roll up. It's nice because it's like, you know, it doesn't block everything out. Right. Air still comes through. Light still comes through. But it gives you a little bit of sense of a backdrop, especially if you do any kind of plants or anything like outdoors. Just I always give that little tip to folks. I did it once in an area when I lived up in Allentown. I did some of that just in the backyard of our row house, you know, because it's like, you know, you're backed in. And it was nice because it didn't feel like it was, you know, shutting out neighbors, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't do it like the whole area, but just kind of like one part of it that just gave you a little bit of privacy and defined the space a little bit, which is nice.
Yeah, I think like the one spot like for privacy I need the most is where I get all the sunlight at. So don't really know if that's going to be constructive with like.
Just saying.
My herb garden.
No. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. If you're doing it, you did definitely not.
I'm going to be planting stuff as well. Which like some plants will give like privacy. So.
Yep. Very cool. Very cool. Well, anything else for the good of the order, man?
Nothing too much. I guess just stay safe and wear a mask.
Stay safe and wear a mask. That's a good way to close things out because we all need it. I had my last, I should say, this was my last week of classes, which was awesome, that we kind of made it through. And I have to say, I give, you know, my students huge, huge, like, props for the semester. I was extraordinarily happy that, you know, pretty much without exception, almost entirely, that everyone that started the semester with us ended the semester with us. That was always a big concern when you're going kind of the online classes that, you know, people just disappear and they drop out and things like this. But these students really kind of did an amazing job, and just and it was, you know, not just my students. And what's also incredible is that you start hearing stories about how many students actually had COVID. Right. And some of the kind of struggles just for that. And yet they, you know, plowed through. So kudos to all those students who've had to kind of deal with this at, you know, in college universities, especially for those of you who have been vigilant in trying to stay safe. Right. And trying to kind of make the best choices that you can under these situations. And, you know, kudos to all the teachers out there in K-12 who have been just kind of busting their butts doing really kind of amazing work, trying to find a pathway through this year. So, you know, as we kind of look towards the end of 2020, I am just so aware and thankful for those folks, you know, especially with my kids, like for those teachers that have put in the work to try to make this like not a lost year, like of schooling. So thank you so much to everybody. But yes, as Sean said, wear a mask, be safe, social distance, watch the recommendations, and we will keep our fingers crossed that we're going to be having a vaccine in not the too distant future. So anything else for the good of the order, man?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right, cool. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Thank you all for tuning in. Thanks for everybody on our YouTube page. I want to remind you, if you're sitting there still on our YouTube page right now, make sure you subscribe. Make sure you hit that kind of little bell button. If you're listening to us on the podcast, make sure you subscribe. Make sure that you kind of leave us a review. Give us a 5-star rating. That'd be awesome to help us see other folks. And we can always remind you that, once again, that you can help support this podcast. You can help support Out the Coop Live and all our related podcasts by going to patreon.com/rcpress and become a patron for as little as $5 a month. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I'm going to thank Jonathan Mann once again for our outro music here today. We hope to see you next week. We'll see you, some of you, Monday for Out the Coop Live. For everyone else, we see you next week, or we'll hear you on the podcast. For Raging Chicken's Out the Coop Live, Out the Coop Podcast, maybe even some Facebook Lives this week. I'm feeling in a festive mood, I guess. All right. Have a good one, everybody. Stay safe. Wear a mask. Let's do it.